We're back to the Neil Haley Show, and I spoke to this gentleman, I can't remember how many years ago, with G.J. Reynolds, my mentor, who's an owner of Wyndham in the Faith, was a five-star by Salas, and he spoke so highly of this man and learned so much about him. I had to have back on again where I'm going to ask more of the questions by myself. So I'm excited to welcome Ben Gay III. Ben, thanks for stopping by, man. Appreciate it, and want to kind of talk about, because you are one of the gurus or fathers in so many ways that GJ talked about in entrepreneurship in specific ways. So Ben, tell us more your background for our listeners that might not know you, and then we'll go into more of what you're currently doing.
Well, I'm obviously handsome. I live in Placerville, California, where gold was discovered. The California Gold Rush started 7 miles from where I'm sitting. I'm married to a lovely lady named Gigi. I've been in selling since I was 10 and won a citywide contest in Atlanta selling Krispy Kreme donuts and a bicycle, and that hooked me. I am now in professional selling all these years later because I won a red Columbia bicycle. Then I opened a lawn mowing service employing in the growing season in Atlanta, 25 of my friends. I never had to mow a lawn. I did the selling, the inspecting, and the collecting, and split the money with them. And they made, as a result of the system my father taught me, as much or more than they would have made if they'd gotten the job by themselves and done the work. So they were happy. And a few other sales jobs, traveling, manufacturers, representative, et cetera. September 15, 1965, I answered a small ad in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Said, if you know anything about marketing plans, want to make more money, dial this number. I did. I wanted to make more money. And it turned out that my business partner and I, my running buddy, Jimmy Rucker, and I answered the ad. And the only other person that responded to it was a little Southern guy named Zig Ziglar.
Oh, my. So
we started out on the same day and the same guy. He was 18 years older and had been selling cookware, but he'd never really made it big. He was just a door-to-door referral type salesperson. But we got into the big money then. First 6 months or so, we struggled, Jimmy and I did. But by the sixth, seventh month, we were making about $40,000 a month in 1965 dollars. That's about 400 or more thousand a month today. Right. And I was hooked and off and running. I've had my ups and downs, but I've never really looked back. A couple of little interesting things. I taught a class called People Builders at San Quentin State Prison and at Lompoc Federal Prison. Met a lot of interesting people. Among them was a gentleman who asked that I be brought to his cell so we could visit. Charlie Manson was his name.
Oh, my God.
About the same time, an old friend said, my husband works for NASA. Would you come down and want to watch a rocket launch? So I went down and saw Apollo 14 take off. Met a bunch of astronauts at a backyard party they had and became the attitude coach for Apollo 15, 16, 17. I've shaken the hands of every human that ever walked on the moon and probably 100 other astronauts of various status. So a little Southern guy from Atlanta, Georgia, with a high school education, it's been an interesting life.
Well, you talk about Zig Ziglar. So let's go with your experience when working with Zig. So that was kind of like, what were you guys doing together and how long did you know Zig?
Until he died. Mm-hmm. From 1965 on. Pardon me, we have a fire here in Northern California and the smoke is getting to me. I'm susceptible to hay fever and, as it turns out, fire smoke. No. I didn't really know that. Yeah, Zig, as I said, was 18 years older. He was in the Navy the day I was born. So he had a jump on me, but he, like a lot of salespeople, he never really clicked and taken off. Holiday Magic Cosmetics was his start, selling cosmetics, recruiting people to sell cosmetics, etc. And about a year, year and a half later, they had a year-long sales contest, a year later, I guess. Nationwide. First prize was a mystery prize. Second prize was a Rolls Royce. Third prize, I think, was a Lincoln Continental and a Thunderbird and whatever. Steak knives, probably after that. And I won the contest, Jimmy and I, but I won the contest. much to my surprise. I knew we were doing well, but I wasn't keeping track day by day. On the last day of the contest, I held an opportunity meeting and recruited X number of people and so much sales volume. On that same day in Columbia, South Carolina, Zig held a victory party because he knew he had won. And when the money was totaled, the amount I beat Zig by was the amount I made in that last opportunity meeting, the last day of the contest. Flew to California, met with the owner, the chairman of the board of the company, William Penpatrick, to find out what the mystery prize was. And it turned out it was presidency of the company. So Zig and I met in September of 65, and a little less than 2 years later, he was working for me. I was still learning from Zig. Don't misunderstand me, but I used to love whenever Zig was in earshot. They'd say, do you know Zig Ziglar, or how do you know Zig? And I'd always say loud enough for Zig to hear, yes, he works for me. And which technically was true, but I never lost track of who got there first and who was doing a great job. Oh, and I asked Bill Patrick, the owner of the company, I said, why was it a mystery prize? He said, in case somebody won that I didn't like, then I would have changed the prize, maybe given away two Rolls Royces or something. I remember on several occasions, Zig and I were talking on the phone. He was back there. I was now in California running the company. And I found out being president of the company wasn't quite as glamorous as it looked like from the outside. We had corporate jets and all sorts of fancy things. But if you've ever flown in a Learjet, you know that flying first class American Airlines is better than the inside of a Learjet. So on bad days, if I was talking to Zig, I'd say, Zig, I'll tell you what, you bring the keys and the Rolls Royce, and I'll give you the keys to the front door, and you can be president. And he said, oh, no, you won fair and square.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And then you talk about Charlie Manson. What did you learn that was, I guess, something that you could go into sales about talking to that man and understanding him?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When I walked into his cell, he was in what's called the Adjustment Center. That's junior college for death row. The reason he couldn't come into my class, he just watched me come and go through a window across the catwalk from where his cell was, and he asked to meet me. He was fascinated that a couple hundred people would greet me when I came in Friday night, and 12 hours later, Saturday morning, a couple hundred people would wave goodbye. And so he wondered what that was. So he asked to have me come up, and I agreed to do it. When I walked into his cell, he had one book. He had a two-bunk cell, but nobody wanted to sleep with Charlie, and the administration didn't want anybody to sleep with him. You don't want to be the one who puts somebody in the cell and Charlie kills him. That would be bad on your resume. So they kept him by himself. And I walk into his cell and I look up the top bunk. He used like a bookcase. That was the only thing on it, was his personal belongings. Nearest to the front door was a book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And I said, Charlie, what an interesting reading selection. And I'm looking around. He didn't have a Gideon Bible in there. That sort of comes with a deal. That was the only book he had. He said, Ben or Mr. Gay, whatever he was calling me the first few visits, that's my Bible. He said, I couldn't have built the Manson family without it. So that was an early lesson, although I was over 30 at the time. That was an early lesson for me in you can take something and use it for good or evil. I can give you a gun and you can protect your family and be a hero and be on all the national news stories. Or you can take the gun and go rob a bank and kill a couple of people. Same gun, different attitude. So Charlie had taken a book that has made many millionaires and made many people very successful and used it to build the Manson family. He said, it's my Bible. I couldn't have built the Manson family without it. Now, the other thing that I remember about him, first of all, people say, oh, weren't you afraid? I was a big deal in the prison. No one was going to be the one who got me killed. So although there was nobody in sight, it was just the two of us in the cell, I'm reasonably confident if I had yelled guard, somebody would be there unlocking the door in seconds. So I wasn't physically afraid even before I saw him. Once I saw him, I wasn't afraid at all. If you remember Sammy Davis Jr., how small he was. Right. Charlie was about that height, maybe a little smaller. So he was no physical threat. He was a mental threat. I remember telling some of my friends, I am so glad that I didn't come to California in the summer of love. Actually, I did, but it was to run Holiday Magic. But come to San Francisco for the summer of love, 19 years old, maybe like a lot of those kids were, and fall in with Charlie Manson. I might have been in Sharon Tate's house stabbing somebody.
Oh my goodness.
He was mentally very persuasive.
Yeah.
And he had eyes when he looked at you. He never broke eye contact. Never. Not to look away, not to cough, not for emphasis. He looked right at you. And I had the feeling his stare was going in my eyes and out the back of my head.
Okay.
He was formidable that way.
So you talk about that, the astronauts. What are you currently doing, Ben? I know you have your podcast, but what's newest with you?
Well, I do what I've always done. I mean, I've been doing, I hate for old friends to call up after a long time and say, what are you doing now? And I said, well, do you remember what I said the last time you asked me that 20 years ago? Yeah. I'm still speaking, still giving sales training. I'm still writing books, coaching, consulting, mentoring with people. We just added, I'm semi-famous for the Closers series. It's the best-selling, most popular, most powerful books on selling and closing ever written. And we just started shipping either last week or this week, the Closers part 5.
Okay.
And now we're adding to the series. I probably will live to see the Closers part 20, I'm guessing. And I've written, to show you what a forward-thinking guy I am. I don't have one. I do. I just wrote a permanent forward for Closers books that come after me. And in essence, it says, when it dawned on me, I may not live forever. It really focused my thinking first to family, then to business. And so I appointed a board of advisors to work with Gigi Gay, my wife. And if you're holding a book called The Closers and it's blue and it's got the National Association of Professional Salespeople seal of approval, and my name is on the front as the writer of the foreword, I either approve the book or would have approved the book if I were still alive. So that'll go in The Closers part 21, 22, 23, 24.
25. Oh, wow.
So we're going to go on. People are always saying, you're building your legacy. Well, I've sold enough books now and I've written 25, sold Closers part 1 alone, sold 10.5 million when we quit counting 25 years ago.
Wow.
So I've got millions of books on various shelves, some in garage sales, I'm sure, out floating around, and hundreds of forwards.
Right.
So I can literally say it will be hundreds of years before there's no longer a book on the planet that didn't have Ben Gay on the front of it.
All right. So Ben, my question to you is, what tip would you offer to close a deal right now to our listeners and viewers?
Well, as you know, I have an 86%, we've talked about it before, I have an 86% closing rate.
Wow.
Not somebody calling up want to buy a book or something. If I happen to catch that call, that doesn't count. I'm talking about seminars, serious investments, land in Arizona, whatever. 86% of the people I've given a sales presentation to over the years, I'm guessing that's about 100,000 one-on-one, not counting 15,000
right.
in an arena. I've closed 86% of them. How? I cheat. Here's how I cheat. I only sell quality products and services that are competitively priced. Doesn't have to be the cheapest, but competitively priced. And I spend my time talking to people or communicating over the internet, whatever, with people who are qualified to buy. That could be spiritually, physically, geographically, financially, in a position to buy. I, for instance, would not have wasted any time trying to sell my mother an oil tanker. She didn't need an oil tanker. So I would talk to people who are in the business of buying, selling, trading.
So you have to find the people qualified. And how do you define that qualified based on your service?
By talking to them and find, first of all, you sort of know who's qualified.
So you have to go through those people to verify if they're qualified or not.
Yeah.
So you're talking, once you qualify. Once you qualify them, you closed 86%. You're going to have to get through a hell of a lot of them to get to the qualified, right?
Yeah. You talk to a lot of people casually. I'm a sales infiltrator. When I'm talking to someone, it sounds like I'm just chatting. I'm gathering information. I'm finding out their hopes, their dreams, their qualifications. I don't prejudge people, but it's just no point. I did sales training for British Motors in San Francisco years ago. And I said, what's your biggest problem? They said, price. And I said, well, let's knock that down up front. Sales infiltrators don't wait for the shoe to drop and then try and overcome it. We bring it up first and brag about it and then knock it down up front. So when we get to the close, we're not surprised, and they can't pull nonsense on us. They can't say, well, I don't have the money. I said, whoa, we promised we'd be straight with each other. And I ask you if you had the money, and you said yes. So don't give me any bull. Tell me what's holding you back. Now, by then, see, we're friends. People buy from people they know, like, and trust. That's a phrase I coined years ago, and I have recently added to it, and with whom they feel safe. At British Motors in San Francisco, they were selling Rolls and other Bentleys, I guess, but Rolls was what was on my mind because I was impressed to see them. And I taught them to greet them at the door. Hi, my name is Ben Gay. How are you? Pleasure to meet you. How can I help you? Well, I'm here to look at that Rolls right there. You know, Neil, one of the great things about this job that I love is I get to meet people who are successful enough to be able to invest $350,000 minimum in a Rolls Royce. I want to get to know you better over time. And then I look at you. If your eyes dilate, you start drooling, or you throw up, you don't have $350,000. So you qualify them up front. And don't waste all day doing it. I just wrote something yesterday about a friend of Gigi, my wife, who worked for her father. And we live on the way up to Lake Tahoe. So people get off the highway and come in and they take up realtor's time. You know, hi, this is a beautiful area. Can you drive me around? And the amateurs jump in the car and drive all over El Dorado County. And then come back and discover they don't have any money, or they were just lonely, or they were waiting for their aunt to meet them there, something. This guy, Jim Moore, would greet them at the door. Hi, how are you? If they had kids, give the kids coloring book. I mean, did it all. He was a Southern gentleman dressed in Western wear. And then when he got all the niceties like that handled, he would sit down, invite them to sit down, put his feet up on the desk and say, now that we have passed the pleasantries of the day, tell me, do you have any money? And Gigi's father used to cringe, but Jim was their number one salesman for 15 years. He didn't waste any time with people who weren't qualified.
Oh, man. And so then that's not considered losing clothes. If you figured out they're not qualified, you're talking about getting them through the process, qualifying them. You're going to close 86% of the time.
Yeah.
So you're going to go through a lot of numbers. And that's a great thing to think about is how do you pre-qualify people, especially in the online marketing world? This is a good question. How do you pre-qualify people in the online marketing world, but you really don't know them from Adam in a specific thing and you get on a call with them?
Well, if it's they go to a site, read it and buy, I don't have to close them. The writing close them.
Sure.
If for some reason we wind up talking, I go from however they got there to email and qualify them a little bit. And then we go to the phone. I'm not going to waste my time talking to somebody who's in his mother's basement, hasn't had a job in 20 years and is lonely. I don't have time. So we get down to it quickly, but we establish, Neil, I establish as fast as I can who I am. First, I sell Ben Gay. I'm like the good housekeeping seal of approval. If you know my background and trust me and know that I know what I'm talking about and so on, then all I have to do is endorse it. I've written 25 books, most of them on selling and closing. Here's about all that. Here's the only close I use. I spend 25 minutes, maybe 30 minutes getting in position to use it, like a sniper. I don't go bird hunting, you know, with shotgun shells and hope one of my thousand pellets hits two birds. I'm like a sniper. When I pull the trigger, I'm going to hit you. I know where you are, who you are. I know if you're in the sniper, I have sniper friends who used to be snipers. You don't shoot the private in the front of the line. You shoot the captain in the back of the line. One, you get the most valuable one. Two, the others don't even know he was hit. You fired from 1,500 yards away. You can start working from the back of the line to the front of the line to the lead guy is the only one left. So I'm a sniper. When I pull the trigger, I know the answer. And my close is this. Neil, I've really appreciated your openness and honesty. Based on what you've told me, here's what I suggest we do. Fill in the blank. Fair enough. 86% of them say, yeah, I'd say 80% say yes. And with the others, it smokes out one last question. Then we answer that and 86% buy.
All right.
Yesterday, I was talking to a nice lady who was buying a mastermind package. She's going to be in a group that I'm one of the leaders of. And I think it was $26,000. I sort of came in late to the party, but $26,000. And I was talking to her and she was back and forth and we established where she still lives in Atlanta. I'm from Atlanta, a couple of mutual contact type situations. And then I said, okay, well, listen, based on what you've told me, here's what I suggest we do. I suggest you join the program. If you need financing, I'll turn you over to Shannon, who will work out your financing with you. And she says, well, I want to think about it. And I said, let me tell you something. We said we'd be straight with each other. When someone decides to buy, I feel an atmospheric pressure change. I mean, literally, like somebody opens a door behind you and your ears react to the new pressure. I felt that with you 15 minutes ago. Asking you to join us was just doing you a favor, a courtesy, sort of what you do at the end of a conversation. You've already decided to join, right? And she said, right. I said, so you just want to know what the payment's going to be, right? Right. Okay. Shannon, transfer her out of the call and work that out. See, there was no sneaking around or being creepy or devious. We agreed to be honest with each other. Right at the end, typical buyer, she decided to not quite be honest with me. I called her on it and told her to buy, as only a friend can tell you, and she bought. And I hadn't known her, by the way, and I haven't met her yet, but I hadn't known her on the screen 20 minutes when I told her what to do.
All right. Where can people go and find information on your purchase books, learn more about you, Ben?
Well, one of the things they can do, they just reset up my bookcase area. So let me find it. This is very high tech. It's on the back of a piece of cardboard. Here's what they can do. Go to stores.ebay.com/Ronzoni, R-O-N-Z-O-N-E, books, B-O-O-K-S. Go there, and the entire closer series is there, all with special pricing and free domestic shipping. So the reason I'm not sending them to my website is this is a better deal for them. I make less money, but they do better. So that's the way to do it. Just stores.ebay.com/Ronzoni books. We'll send them out the same day we get your order. I recommend to start the closers parts 1, 2, and 3, and then we'll work you over time through the system.
All right, Ben, we appreciate you coming by. Definitely have to have it on again. You are a wealth of knowledge, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Neil, thank you. It was my honor and pleasure.
You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a moment.